I could talk for hours about every single episode of How I Met Your Mother. And we do. But when it comes to my own health, I used to be pretty clueless. I'd shrug off low energy or a fitness plateau as just stress, basically guessing about what my body actually needed. But you shouldn't guess when it comes to your health.
Instead, you should get the real data that supports your wellness with LabCorp on-demand health testing. On their website, you can choose from a suite of more than 100 health tests, including micronutrient, allergy, testosterone, fitness, sexual wellness, and more, all available to purchase without a doctor's appointment. Just purchase a test online, then visit a local LabCorp location to have your sample collected. It's so simple. Within days, you'll have accurate results that are easy to understand from a lab doctor's trust.
To start your journey, visit ondemand.labcorp.com/mother and use code MOTHER to save up to 15% on select tests. That's ondemand.labcorp.com/mother and use code MOTHER. Know yourself.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kristen from Sacramento. How I Met Your Mother means a lot to me because when I moved here from Turkey, I felt very lonely and lost. I first watched this show during the summer of my freshman year, during some of the loneliest times I've ever had. It gave me hope. Back then, friends and love seemed so distant, but this show made me feel closer. It quickly became my comfort, helping me escape and imagine a different life whenever I felt lonely. I want to thank Josh because he portrayed the character in a way that made me feel at ease simply being human. Now, 17 years later, I'm getting married, and it felt so meaningful and nostalgic to see Josh perform at a concert in Sacramento last year. That truly felt like a full circle moment, and it healed something in me. Thank you all for creating this show and this podcast, and congratulations, Josh, on becoming an awesome dad.
I'm alone. What a pity I won't be soon in New York City. When I see you, please permit me to tell you everything in New York City.
Ah, welcome to How We Made Your Mother. I'm your host, Josh Radner. My co-host, his name is Craig Thomas. I'm looking at him right now.
Hey,
he looks very handsome.
I see you blushing from that letter.
Kristen, thank you so much. Wow, that really moved me.
Really,
I'm so glad that you were at that concert in Sacramento. I have very fond feelings about that evening. I remember it well. The venue was great. The crowd was so lovely. I'm so glad to know you were out there. And also, again, you know, this show meeting people at really tough moments where they needed just, I don't know, like a feeling of reassurance from the universe that things are going to be okay. And I just love that that my portrayal of Ted made you feel that it was okay to be human. That's a really nice thing to say.
I love that way of saying that. It's so nice.
Yeah.
It's like that is one of the nicest compliments an actor can get, I think.
Yeah. Tell you, Craig, I think we've talked about this, but like I only learned this after How I Met Your Mother, but I've played this game on set with a lot of actors and it's really fun. And it's called Alien or Human. Did we ever play
this?
Yes,
we've done it.
Yeah, we did play it.
Yeah, we've
talked about it. How I Met Your Mother, you could almost do it by shows. Like How I Met Your Mother is human.
It's human.
It's a human show.
It's a human show.
Yeah.
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 And yeah, like
it's not
Arrested, Arrested it's not Development is an alien.
Arrested Development is an absolutely alien
show. I mean, that is
show.
A compliment to Arrested Development.
Totally. No, human or alien is not a value judgment.
No,
it's like they're
it's
both fascinating in their own way.
Yes.
But yes, very, very team human show.
It's very team human. And what's cool, what I also liked for you about that letter is we're getting to see this glimpse into who is watching our show all that time and who has been watching our show all that time. You got a glimpse within a glimpse there at someone being at your concert in Sacramento and also having a whole other experience about hearing your music at that concert that unlocked, again, like the Russian nesting dolls that we sometimes talk about in this show's narrative style. Like that was a person experiencing your concert that brought them with, you know, now with their loved one, I think, right? That they now are less lonely but then flashing back to when they didn't have that, when they're first here from Turkey, like there's just a lot going on there, and it all comes down to them watching you play music in Sacramento, and now you know that was happening in that crowd that night.
Right. I mean, everyone coming to anything is bringing
it's amazing.
The whole like I sometimes think about it. I would think about that driving in Los Angeles, just stuck in traffic, and just be like, every single car has like a Proustian amount of like a novel.
Absolutely.
Like just unbelievable details and unbelievable
infinite stories,
pathos and stories. And
yeah,
it's that thing, Sonder, we've talked about that, but like the idea, the realization that everyone you see has a rich, as rich an interior life as you do.
Absolutely.
So, there's also
the star of their movie. They are the star of the movie happening in that
car. Background buddy.
You are background extra. Yeah, you are just pretending to talk in the back corner of the bar.
There's also something about, we talk a lot about how I Met Your Mother changes as you change. You know, she first started watching the show. She was new to this country. She was lonely. She was having trouble finding her way. And she's still watching the show. She's listening to this podcast, but her life looks totally different. So
it's great. Thank you for hearing those stories is the best part of doing this.
Thank you. Thank you, Kristen. And congrats she getting married or about to get married, or I can't remember. But
congrats nonetheless.
Congrats.
Wherever we are in the continuum.
So today we are talking about episode 12 of season 3. Is that right? Episode 12. This episode is called No Tomorrow. Alec, when did this episode air?
Well, this one aired on March 17th, 2008.
Oh, literally St. Patrick's Day. How fitting. I guess we knew we were going to air on St. Patrick's Day, and we did a St. Patrick's Day episode.
And also to listeners of this podcast, your brain should notice that this is this is not 1 week since the previous episode. Is it correct?
Yeah, this is really interesting. This was the coming out of a 3-month-long Writers Guild strike. We had been off the air 3 months. The episode Platinum Rule had been shot and produced and edited without writers. And then we went dark for 3 months as the writers were on strike. And then we came back out of this. The strike ended. The writers made a little progress and made a deal. And the strike, when it ended, it was so sudden how it ended. And it was like, okay, get this back up. Get this giant Rube Goldbergian, like massive aircraft carrier back on track now. And I remember, I think we had to do something like, we had to shoot and produce 9 episodes in about 10 and a half, 11 weeks. And this was the kickoff of that.
That's
it was insane.
Insane.
It's the hardest, it's the most material we've ever had to generate in the shortest amount of time. And it's probably one of the hardest we ever worked in our lives.
So 20 episodes in season 3 because of the strike, shortest How I Met Your Mother season
Shortest season we did. And this back 9 of that, it was absolutely bonkers. So this was the opening salvo of that bonkers 9 episodes in 10 and a half weeks. Starting off somehow fittingly with St. Patrick's Day, the drunken careening 9 episodes in 10 and a half weeks began.
So fittingly. Craig, give us a quick armchair summary of what happens.
Yeah, well, it's our big St. Patrick's Day episode, and it is exploring the idea of consequence and karma. And I think really the bigger question of, is Ted a little adrift at this point in his life? I think it's a big philosophical Ted episode. Talk about that opening message about Ted's humanity. We're seeing some of Ted's flaws in this. This is Barney and Ted decide to act on St. Patrick's Day like it's the last night of their lives. There's no tomorrow. It's Armageddon. There's no consequences. There's no karma. There's no rules. And they start acting they begin anarchy. They begin a night of anarchy and chaos. And it turns out it is not the last night of existence. There are still rules. There are still consequences.
Yeah.
And Ted finds that out the very, very hard way, physically violent way. And the next morning, where he thinks he's become a little more like Barney, and this has been a single season for Ted, right? He's been single all season, and I like that we've planted these seeds all season long. If he's a bit adrift, and he gets a real talking to from Marshall Erickson, he gets a little bit of an intervention before we thought of the intervention banner. There might have been an intervention banner had we thought of that idea yet, but that's essentially what happens. And I think this is one of those episodes. The main theme of the episode is a reckoning, is a kind of lost weekend reckoning for Ted.
Yeah. Well, so Ted was conceived as a character, as you said, George Bailey meets Lloyd Dobler.
Yeah.
Right? He's this incredibly heart-forward guy, romantically brave, sometimes insane, but like really goes for it. He's an incredible friend. He's resilient. He's got all these like really admirable qualities. So the first season, he's you know, pretty heart sick about Robin and pursuing Robin.
Yeah.
The second season they get together and they have what up to that point one can assume is the most impactful, most, you know, this most the most serious relationship that either of them had ever had.
Definitely.
You know, they went the deepest, yeah, most intimate, and then they break up. So we see the beginning of season three. He's trying to process the breakup. So is she. But there is a sense, especially at the end of season two, Barney kind of sets this up, that Ted is going to be out on the prowl with Barney.
Free range Ted, as Dave Hemmings
said. Free range Ted, yeah. Right? And we saw he rides the tricycle.
He has a wild time.
He has a wild time with Mandy Moore out in the tattoo parlor. He gets a butterfly tattoo. So he really does go for it. But I remember you guys were very excited about this. I was very excited about this because I was very excited to not play the kind of virtuous center of the story and be a little more, to just scuff him up a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I had said to you, and we've talked about this in podcasts, but we never, I don't know if we'd confirmed it, but Pam told me that there was a note, a kind of gentle correction from the network that they said, there's a lot of Barneys on TV. There's only one Ted.
Yeah.
Meaning there's a lot of, not that there's a lot of Neil Patrick Harris's on TV. There's a lot of Lotharios on TV.
Yep.
But not a lot of guys who are this kind of guy who wants to be in a relationship, wants to settle down.
Yeah.
And I think they recognized that it was a new archetype and it was a special archetype.
Yeah.
On TV. Not that it didn't exist in life, you know?
Yeah.
So in some ways, when I watched Marshall give Ted the talking to at the end, I almost felt like it was the network talking to you guys about Ted's essential nature.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I think we did get, I think my memory of it was like, we miss nice Ted now. Like, it was fun. It was fun to go adrift for a while. And I think that was the note. I mean, I think Pam was also giving us a note. And it's funny because I think earlier in the series, we were getting more notes like, they should all be light and fun and Ted should be a guy and he should be out there too. But I think by season three, they realized, and rightly so, that what's special about Ted is that he's Ted.
Right.
And we don't want to have him be, you don't want bizarro Superman for too long. At a certain point, you want Superman to be Superman again.
Yeah.
And you want it. And I think it was time. And we got a whole episode out of that idea. We got a whole episode of like, this is the come to Jesus speech. Like, come back, Ted.
And I wrote you this little ditty to sing to you in New York City.
We'll be right back.
Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, back to the show. Ted was still funny, goofy, could get too drunk. I mean, we talk about it. He gets blackout drunk. Like,
alarming amount of the time.
Speaking of interventions, like, that's where the banner should have hung, probably more than this.
Definitely.
But there's something like, he can still be the guy who's at the club with all his friends, but he's going to talk to the coat check girl.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
He will find the weird corner and he will find the like cool, interesting person hiding in the shadows. And in this one, he's co-Barney.
Exactly.
He's not looking for that person in the shadows.
He's at the center of the chaos. He's not with the coat room, a coat check girl. He's seducing a married woman.
A married woman.
Yeah.
He is absolutely drinking the Barney Kool-Aid, right? Yeah. And he has a little bit on and off all season. And this is the episode where he goes too far. I mean, and I'm glad it felt earned because we did have all these episodes in season three where like really crazy shit happened for Ted.
Yeah.
Why is he telling his children all this stuff? It's like, this is his cautionary tale phase where it's like, I went a little too free range here and I needed to be dialed back. And it was my best friend in the world that told me. And I thought that was a really powerful scene watching Marshall say to Ted, essentially, you're not Ted anymore.
Yeah.
We don't need another Barney. We need you. I'm a married man. At one point you said, I really believed you when you said you wanted to be that too. Now you're the guy making out with a married woman and considering going home with her. And I really liked the power of Marshall telling him that, and that Ted took it.
And a good friend, I think, does provide their like bumpers, you know, so you don't go so far.
I found myself thinking about those moments where in life, we all, every now and again, we all need that moment, don't we? In one way or another, we need a friend to say like, hey,
yeah,
I'm seeing whatever it may be. It may not be this context at all, but do you have that friend in life who can actually really have the uncomfortable conversation with you if you're off track?
You know, when How I Met Your Mother started to become a hit, and I suddenly, you know, had money for the first time in my life, had people recognizing me almost every time I would go out, you know, and it changes your relationship with your friends who are not on hit TV shows.
Yeah.
Now, some of those friends are like ride or die. They're just going to be with you, and they're actually like, they're protecting you. But there were a couple times in early seasons where I'm thinking of someone in particular. I won't mention her name because why would I? And she was lovely, and she was also on a television show. And I remember I said something that she said, you can't say that. Like, you can't, you know, you can't say that.
Yeah.
And I remember this was in a magazine article I read, but Bowen Yang has this podcast, and him and his friend used to kind of like pull apart pop culture and talk about, and I guess Tina Fey came on the show and she said, you're too famous to be shitting on people. Like, you cannot, you're not an impartial observer anymore. Right. You
and
have been invited to the party.
He didn't realize that.
He didn't realize it.
You're the frog in the boiling water.
Yeah.
You have no awareness that
so
water
they,
is boiling.
They apparently read as like a Scout's Honor, like it's a anthem for their show. They read what Tina Fey said, like as part of their show now.
That's
or something.
Really funny.
If I'm misremembering this, forgive me,
mission,
but I read an article
statement
about this.
Of the show. That's really funny.
And I think I remember there were certain things where I was like, oh yeah, I have to be very careful with my words, like certain friends. Like, you have a lot of actor friends who are really struggling when you have some success. You have to be really sensitive around that. And I think sometimes you step in it. You know, you're not as sensitive and aware.
Everybody does at
everyone
some point.
Does.
And then you just, it's that debate. It's that friendship debate of, I think some friends that aren't your best friends maybe will just drift away because they don't like what you're doing. And you don't know why. Because you're in your own oblivious thing, and they're not a good enough friend in a way.
Yeah.
Good enough some value judgment. They're not a close enough friend to have that painful, exist in that discomfort. But every once in a while, you have that person who's like, hey. Like, I've heard, speaking of other podcasts, I heard Will Arnett. And Will Arnett, on Smartless, Will Arnett had Bradley Cooper on. They had him as a guest. And Bradley Cooper said, like, Will Arnett, you were the person who told me I was out of control, and it was part... You were one of the turning points of making me realize I wanted to get a hold of my life in a different way, I think, from some addiction issues or something. And he was very open. And they had this really emotional conversation about it. And Bradley Cooper was saying, like, you essentially sat him down, like, the morning after a drunken night or a druggy night, whatever it was happening, where Will Arnett wasn't, like, Will Arnett was at a group of, like, a poker game or something, and called Bradley Cooper the next day and said, like, how did you think that night went? And Bradley Cooper was like, it was great. And Will Arnett was like, but was it? And like sort of laid out to him. And
he
and
hung the intervention banner.
He hung the intervention banner and said, like, you were an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, you were on substances that were making you be an asshole. And this is, I hope I'm not telling this story wrong or disrespectfully. Bradley Cooper was very much now sober, saying, with deep gratitude.
Yeah.
To Arnett. And Arnett started crying, I think, on the podcast episode. It was really a beautiful conversation between two men. It reminded me of this scene with Ted and Marshall.
I've said it before, but Tim Ferriss said your success in life is directly proportional to the amount of uncomfortable conversations you're willing to have.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And when you have a friend that is willing to risk the friendship, essentially, by saying the hard thing, you ultimately will be more grateful to that friend than you are to a friend who never challenged you.
Yeah, and I really like that Ted was grateful. I really like how that scene ended, where Ted was clearly like, You gave it to me there, but maybe I needed it.
You can also, like, in certain ways, I had a lot of guilt about having money and having fame with friends that didn't have it. I have a friend who I literally, like, adore this person more than anyone. Like, I just adore this friend. He lived with me for a long time. And I knew he wasn't making a lot of money. I would always pick up the check for him. Always, always, always.
Yeah.
And one day he was like, you gotta let me pay sometimes. He goes, because it reinforces an idea in my head that I can't pay and I can.
Yeah.
So like that was an interesting negotiation.
That's really interesting. Right? And I'm glad it's good he said that because.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't want to be robbed.
You didn't know. We can't read other people's minds all the time. And sometimes we are lost. Sometimes we're lost on our own shit. And it's almost like being given the opportunity to be a better person. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this episode really, I talked about this a tiny bit during Platinum Rule, but like this episode, and I think one of my theories about How I Met Your Mother is that people, it's a benevolent universe and it has some form of ultimate order, not order in the moment always, because a lot of times it's chaos and things are out of control and everyone's hurting and lost and done. But ultimately, the premise of the show is this guy lands on his feet. These people figure it out.
Yeah.
And it just takes them some time. They have to live through the discomfort. They have to live through the lessons they have to learn, you know, like Platinum Rule, like they have to have the experiential knowledge, not just the, they can't learn just from words. They have to fall on their face, get punched in their face every once in a while. This is a somewhat of a fun mirroring fact. I did have certain things that happened to me that either happened on How I Met Your Mother or they happened to me afterwards, or they happened to me and then they happened on How I Met Your Mother. one of which was, I think I mentioned this, but when Marshall and Ted get stuck in the blizzard and have to hold each other for warmth on the road trip.
Yes, you talked about this.
Yeah, my friend Bram and I drove to Sedona and got lost, ran out of gas, and had to sleep in the car. And I was, as we were falling asleep, I was like, this happened on How I Met Your Mother. Other one was in the summer. I know that, you know, this is another thing we'll talk about in our summer episode, which we haven't done yet.
Yes.
But, I had that summer where I went to Brazil. I did 6 ayahuasca ceremonies over 2.5 weeks. And before I got back, I did 3 more ceremonies in the rainforest in Colombia. Totally pivotal change summer. And I do you remember I came back and I wasn't drinking alcohol anymore.
Yeah.
Because I had this big ceremony, my 8th ayahuasca ceremony in Colombia, that was all about my drinking. The reason drinking was at the front of my mind was because I was drunk. I was trying to sleep with this nursing student in Columbus, Ohio, named Sarah, and she had a boyfriend, and I didn't mind.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't around,
but
he was around in the parking lot when I dropped her off.
Wow.
And he punched me in the face twice.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What age was this Josh Radner?
This was in between 2nd and 3rd season. I got punched.
It was between year 2 and 3. It was between year 2 and 3.
So it was before this episode.
Oh my God. That's fucking crazy.
I had this weird feeling during this episode. I had been punched. Like, I knew what it was like to take a punch. I mean, I was pretty drunk. I didn't feel it that much. I felt it, you know, but I had the same black eye. That's insane.
The show.
Yeah.
That is insane.
My nose was all puffed up. And then I had to go. I was home in Columbus because I was hosting a kickoff. My dad and I were co-emceeing this alumni kickoff, like, fundraiser at Kenyon to like, increase the endowment. And, like, Paul Newman had dedicated all this money. And I, like, my mom had to put makeup under my eye.
The fact that it was your mom doing that is also a great part.
And I came
of the
home.
Story.
Like, I had to wake up my mom because I couldn't. My nose wouldn't stop bleeding. So I was nervous to lie down, you know. And then my dad came down in his bathrobe and put, like, a bag of frozen peas on my face. Like, it was so vivid.
This is an unbelievable story. I can't believe, I don't think I ever heard this. This is so this episode. And then we shot this episode months later.
And by that point, I was like, I'm not being the man I want to be. Like, I need to reconsider.
But
some
we
things.
Did not write this because you told us this. I think this is probably a story you did not feel good about at the time. I don't think you even, as we were close, I don't think you necessarily told me.
It was such a strange, like, do you know that Mike Birbiglia has a line in one of his shows, it's one of my favorite lines of his, where he gets arrested for like unpaid speeding tickets and he ends up, they throw him in jail. It's like somewhere in New Jersey or something. And he goes, I can't go to jail. I wear New Balance sneakers. like just the idea that like I'm the kind of guy in these sneakers, like we don't go to jail. Like I had this idea like, I'm not the guy who gets, I don't get punched.
Yeah.
I like back out of the way when someone gets, you know, a guy at the bar gets punched. Like I'm not the protagonist in that story.
Yes. Oh
you know,
God.
And it was such a strange night in my life.
That is a really weird night.
Yeah.
And so when, and then you had like this moment of clarity about that was about that night in some ways and about where am I when you were like, you know, later you had that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And
then
this
I
came
had,
up for you when you were in, when you were
like
doing,
a month and a half later, on ayahuasca in the jungle. And I realized not just that story, but there were a number of drinking stories that kind of came into my awareness.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is not, I'm not being who I want to be here. So.
Well, that's the moment. I mean, it's so eerily echoing this story or vice versa. Like that sequence where Ted is hearing how he sounded the morning after. I heard another friend of mine who's now sober said to me, their turning point was there was some video of them when they were drunk and out and they thought they were like funny and witty and having a great time.
Yeah.
And then he saw the video of that night and he was like appalled by what by the energy he was seeing. And it's just that weird thing of like, oh, I was not, that's not me. That's not who I thought I was in that moment.
Yeah,
that's not
how
I define myself. But you kind of don't know it until you know it. And
there's a great, I love C.S. Lewis's nonfiction. I don't know if anyone's read any, you know, has a great book. And I was raised Jewish, but I love reading about different traditions. But he has this beautiful, beautiful book called Mere Christianity. It's like, it kind of explained Christianity in a way that I was like, oh, I get it. Like, this is quite beautiful. And he has this thought experiment around God because he was an atheist and he was kind of converted by J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yes.
But he said in his atheist days, he would always say, if there's a God, why is the world such a mess? That was, you know, you hear that a lot. If there's a God, why is the world such a mess? And then one day he went, wait, how do I know the world is a mess? Like, why do I even know the world is a mess?
Right.
And he started to interrogate, what is in me that knows this is off? He goes, you can't know what a crooked line is unless you have some sense of a straight line. So he started asking himself, what is the part of me that knows this is wrong?
Right.
And where does that come from? And I think that what you're describing, like the video, like certain times we betray ourselves.
Yeah.
Like we're like, this isn't who I am. Like this isn't, I know this is a crooked line because I have some sense of my straight line here.
You're like, this isn't the character of Josh Radner.
No. This is like the writers are making a misstep here.
The writers are fucking up.
And you have to engage in some course correction.
Yes. Well, it's very funny because you just said the word crooked and there's this whole thing of the crooked floor in Marshall and Lily's apartment.
Oh my God.
And that was a lovely dovetail at the end of this episode. I hadn't watched this one in a while and I was thinking, oh, this is a little A story, B story. I like the B story because I love the crooked apartment. We built this, I mean, the amazing scenic design team of How Much Mother built this unbelievable, like that set was elevated, I think. And like there was this gigantic like winch where you could literally do that. So things really were rolling because of gravity. Like they built this setup on this tiltable.
Just technically, like I kind of wanted to ask Pam because I loved it was shot in a way that you could see the floor was crooked.
No, it was, they built an amazing set that could
do
that.
But I didn't know if she was shooting it like normal. And the set was just tilted or whether Pam was doing some tricky camera
stuff. I think it
stuff.
Was both. I think there was both, different moments of both. And but it really was tilted. That was real gravity. It was this unbelievable scenic design achievement. But then I was like, oh, that's a, I love that story, by the way. I, after exactly what you say, where life can sometimes echo How I Met Your Mother, but after How I Met Your Mother too, even though you just said this happened before. After, at the end of How I Met Your Mother, my wife and I bought an apartment in Tribeca that I'm sitting in right now, that we've been in for 12 years. That is a great place in many ways, but the floors are fucking crooked.
Is that why you're always on the podcast, floating out of frame?
This room isn't, but there's a couple rooms that very much are. And I bought my wife once, she was like, I need a new desk chair. And I bought her like this really nice desk chair with wheels. And she would sit typing and just roll out of frame.
It's also funny that Tribeca is...
You gotta get me a different chair.
Tribeca is like Joey Satripla in terms of like...
Joey Satripla. I know, it's like that combined name, Joey Satripla. And I said, like, I was like, this happened on How I Met Your Mother, and now I'm fucking living in it. And I still every day like watch something roll across certain parts of my apartment. I swear to God. So I always like this B story, but I was like, is this just a B story off in B Storyville and its own little discrete B story land? But when that little thematic overlap happens at the end, that I'm like Marshall and Lily, I had gone crooked, like their apartment. I had gone, something about me had gone askance.
So
this
smart.
Seasick quality.
It's so smart.
And
it's
you
so
literally used that word when you were just telling that story.
Oh, that's funny. Yes.
Crooked.
But when the A and B story kind of get united by the end, it's so satisfying. I think though that about the idea that like, oh, this happened on How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I felt kind of bullied by how people wouldn't let me live my life, you know, when I would write something on Twitter or something, is because if you do 208 episodes of a very human show about human
everything
beings,
everything can be related back to
everything
gets covered. You ever say or do.
Everything gets covered, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like there was no part of life that we left untouched.
Yes.
So anytime really you're just, yes, my wife is here.
I'm just watching.
Oh, she's just watching. You made me nervous. This is a small off-camera guest appearance from a clinical psychologist who has never seen How I Met Your Mother.
I want her
who
take
also
on
happens
this
to be married to Josh.
So you didn't have a Marshall telling you that, like, that moment of clarity.
I mean, I probably had a couple.
Ayahuasca was your Marshall.
Ayahuasca was my Marshall, exactly. Exactly.
Ayahuasca was your Marshall.
It was like, this isn't
contest.
The man you are. And it was in Jason's voice. It was weird.
It was really weird. I thought that was a really nice scene between you guys that really proved that best friendship. And Marshall was willing to have that uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah.
And it was very real. And it does set Ted on a different path for the rest of the season. In fact, he meets his next serious love interest the next episode, not to jump ahead, but Marshall puts him back on a path. And isn't this what our best friends do to us? And sometimes it's through uncomfortable conversations. And I really liked that scene.
And this old man, he must admit he fell in love with you, New York City.
And now, commercials. End of commercials, back to show.
You know what I thought was like pretty smart? And I was trying to remember it, and I'm almost sure there were a bunch of things that like get kind of weird in your memory because you're like in Ted Mosby Architect, where you get scenes get replayed like in different ways, and they get like swapped Ted out for Barney, and the when Marshall plays back the phone, the takes are, you know, they're grainy and they're weird,
handheld,
but they're also like, they weren't the same takes. They were, Ted sounded dickier in those takes.
Yeah, you amped up the dicky and you amped up the drunkenness and the dickishness, and it was being outside of yourself and seeing what you thought was happening was not what was really happening.
Right. It's kind of like what the Bradley, like I was the life of the party.
Yeah, and,
then it's like, play
no,
the tape.
You were aggressive.
Play the tape.
Yeah, play the tape. And that's what Arnett was doing for him. And I think it changes life. I think they forged a bond, it sounded like, because of that hard conversation. And
yeah,
I think those are really important moments. Backing up for a second, I remember this feeling of coming out with it. I really like this episode, I should say. I really like this philosophical symposium we're talking about. All the things we're talking about are juicy. That scene with Marshall and Ted's really juicy. I remember feeling with this episode like this was a pilot. This was a season premiere. in a way. We had been off the air 3 months. That's as long as the fucking summer is. Yeah. You know what I mean? This was like season 3.2, you know, is like you're just launching it again. And I remember feeling like we were singing for our supper. We had spent 3 months going, are we going to be canceled coming out of the strike? Is anyone going to still watch the show? We were having momentum. Now there's 3 months off.
Especially you're depending on a kind of serialized week to week, like people following a big story.
Yeah, totally. And this was supposed to launch. This was an important moment. And this was picking up on Ted having been adrift in earlier season 3. Well, guess what? There was 3 months without episodes. Does anyone remember that? So I remember this feeling like we have to prove ourselves in this episode. And I think we did. I think we came out with a really interesting premise. The Yellow Umbrella stuff is really interesting. It really reawakens that mother mystery. Because at the beginning, in the premiere, they first premiere of season 3, I would call this the second premiere of season 3. It was kind of like a second start. The first premiere, we teased the Yellow Umbrella for the first time. We said, you kids, you know the actual sort of How I Met Your Mother, the simple part, the Yellow Umbrella thing, right? And so the Yellow Umbrella has been coded as this important thing. And now in this episode, when you see at the end of that cold open, there's a woman with a yellow umbrella whose face we did not see waiting to get into that bar. Now that bar is so interesting, right? It's Hitchcock, the bomb under the bleachers. That's what the Hitchcock thing of, like, you can make any scene interesting as long as there's a bomb under the bleachers. You need to know what's going. There's something that's going to happen. Ted bumps into a woman at one point, just making a simple cross through the episode. And I remember we specifically did that. So people would be like, wait
moment.
A second.
It's such
so
a good
that
moment.
Everything inside that bar is nuclear powered now because you know the mother's there. In the end, all he gets is the umbrella. But I would rephrase that. It's so fucking exciting that he gets into this umbrella. It's the first physical connection to the mother.
Yeah.
And he is sent off. He's in a low, low moment, hungover in the rain, searching for his
phone.
Black eye, got the shit beat out of him. He got a talking to from his best friend. And he's just like limping out of that club, I think not even having found the phone.
Yeah.
But God damn it, we know he is holding a talismanic, powerful object that means everything, and he has no idea that he just found this crucial clue.
Not only that, he leaves with this yellow umbrella that is going to play a huge role in the fate of his life, that his children would not be born if he hadn't grabbed this yellow umbrella, right?
But is it the low moment of his...
But that's another thing of the How I Met Your Mother verse is that he had to be a dick that night.
To get
he
there.
Had to get punched that night. He had
punched.
To go through all of the... He had to be dragged through the mud.
Yes.
You know?
Emotional jackass. He had to be Johnny Knoxville.
It's my favorite Radner and Lee song that Ben and I wrote, Down in the Dirt. Now I'm down in the dirt, but the dirt's where the seeds go, then where the trees grow. Not a bad place to be.
Well, you know, that's like, it. That's exactly it.
Down there.
If he hadn't have had that night, that no tomorrow night, and maybe that was the last night of, that was supposed to be the end of the universe. Well, maybe it's the end of a certain Ted. Maybe a certain Ted ended that night and a new one walked off of that umbrella.
But also think how casually our lives change.
Oh my God.
Like Barney just is like, just twists his arm just enough to get him out of the house. And Marshall says just that weird thing about the smell to Lily that makes him kind of want to go, let me get out of the house.
Yeah.
You know,
all of those little things led to him meeting the mother. Cause that umbrella, without jumping too far ahead, 6 seasons ahead, in season 9, that umbrella is a crucial part of how they meet. And you're right. He would not have been gifted that magical key to his own future life of that umbrella that without having colossally fucked up.
Yeah. It also reminds, I mean, it's kind of tangential, but there's that, I think I've mentioned this before, but that Cormac McCarthy quote, you never know what worse luck your bad luck saved you from.
Yeah. It's a great line.
Isn't that amazing?
It's an amazing line. Yeah. Well, that's it.
Well,
that's
I think when you connect the dots like we're doing right now, it gives you a sense that the universe of How I Met Your Mother is one where nothing is wasted.
Yes.
No night is like a bust.
Yes.
Because the sequence, the cascade of events that follow from every, there's no little things.
Yes.
There's no such thing as a little thing. Everything has meaning. And I think in some ways, the bomb under the bleachers, the Hitchcock thing, you guys did it in the pilot. Like the whole thing is imbued. I was always a little bit struck by people's obsession with the mother while we were on the air. Like, who's the mother? You gave them this mystery that I never thought was actually the most interesting part of the series, but it certainly was a hook.
Yes.
For mystery lovers.
Yes, I totally agree. That's exactly how I see it too. And I would, if we had to spend so many years getting asked that question, like, no, the series is mostly about something else. I know it's, I'm so glad we have this other thing that's magic and somewhere it's headed, but it's really about something else.
I always liked it. I don't know if I came up with this or someone else came up with this, but I always thought of it as the show is about a guy who had to grow up and become the man that he was going to be so that he was ready to meet
that is absolutely. I mean, that's kind of how we pitch the show in so many words too. So that is the ethos of the show, I think. And that's what you said it beautifully there. Like, he has, and that's why these mistakes matter. I mean, Roger Federer, greatest tennis player of all time, arguably, he gave this great commencement speech, I think, where he said, what percentage of points do you think I won? And it was something like 54%. So he had to lose almost half the time in order to become the greatest tennis player of all time. And that, therefore, the losses not only are necessary, but have meaning. The losses are the only way you win.
Do you know that the highest scoring NBA, like the top five highest scorers, are also the top five highest missed shots?
That's it.
It's the same five people.
Yeah, that's it. And it's like, Ted, this was a miss for Ted. This was a miss. This was a big L. So he took an L, but it's not. It was just a step on the way to where he had to where he had to get.
It was also a little bit like, I think Oscar Wilde said, or no, William Blake, I forget who said it. You can't know what enough is until you've had more than enough. Like it's, you know, especially in your 20s, these are times of testing out limits, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, by the time I got to high school, like I went to we drank a lot in high school, in my high school, my suburban Ohio high school. So by the time I got to Kenyon College, like I was pretty good at drinking just because I knew when to stop. Like I knew what my,
you had found my, those limits.
I found my threshold, whereas other students were like kind of new to it. And I was like, they're going to have a rough morning. You know?
Well, another thought, just to wrap this up, I feel like the final thought of this episode is a really profound one, which is, thank God I didn't meet your mother that night.
Yes. I was not the man.
That was not the me she needed to meet.
Yeah,
and I was not the me who deserved to meet her or was ready to meet her. And it's good you didn't meet Jordana the night in that parking lot.
She
you get punched out.
Well, she would have been too young. She would have been very young.
We don't need to get into that.
Let's not talk about that.
We've derailed the whole idea.
But you know what's funny? When you built in the, just Ted bumps into the woman, and that's just an Easter egg for people who are really eagle-eyed. But I remember that actress was like lovely, and I talked to her, and there was a feeling, I'm sure she was like, am I the fucking mother?
People were conspiracy theorizing that on social media. It was wonderful. It was like, that was just us fucking with people.
I need to apologize to my mother-in-law, Vivian, who doesn't like it when I swear. So I just
And I apologize. I swear much more than Josh. So Vivian, my apologies. Yeah. My mom doesn't like it either. Sorry.
So a couple things. Another Ted comes out with that Western shirt. He was really...
What happened in 2007 where every third shirt is Western? Is it cowboy shirt? What's going on?
I don't know.
Is that what gave us the idea for the red cowboy boots eventually?
Barney's pretty gross in this episode.
Barney is very gross, but of course that is the theme. That is the theme. And Barney doesn't change or grow at all because he wakes up and says, I'm awesome next to a dumpster. That's kind of Ted evolves in this episode and Barney just says, nope, devolves. Nailed it again.
So he comes in wearing this green suit.
Yeah,
I have to tell you about an experience that Jordana and I had. Marshall says, can we shoot pool on you, right?
Yeah.
For some reason, when we literally had to rewind it three times and then finally turned on the subtitles because we thought he was saying, we should poo on you.
Oh my God.
We couldn't unhear it. Like, we could not unhear it. We're like,
once you hear it wrong,
he's saying,
like, one time,
we should poo on you. But he said, can we shoot pool on you?
Right. Well, it would have made sense because, like, toilets are green, so the joke works. Yeah,
of course. Of course, toilets are green. I love, Jason was just messing with us, but when he answers the phone, he goes, hello.
Yes, I know. That's just out of nowhere. That's nowhere. A real seagull just being seagull.
I like I smell weird, but I love when I always remember Allie saying, that is new.
That is new.
That's a new smell.
It's a new smell your body's making there. And that's the tipping point for Ned. If that hadn't have happened, he wouldn't have gotten the umbrella. Ergo, he wouldn't have met the mother. So thanks, Marshall and Lily.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
Talking about Marshall's smelly hands. It's all they're all steps on your path that you don't know.
I like the dude shortage of 1883.
That was funny, yeah.
But also, like, he uses 83%, but in 1883.
There's a lot of 83.
I like when Barney says, I don't see no ring on this finger.
Yes. There's such dicks. Right away, they're dicks abandoning those poor women out. They're
Who seemed really nice.
You know what's funny? There's also the other thing in that club, in addition to the mothers there, there's also a lot of ways. I like the mislead of, like, what's the thing that's going to get Ted? I almost thought we could have, up front, the narrator could have said, like, I got my ass kicked this night, kids. Just to plant, that could have been a little more of a bomb under the bleachers, and then you're watching to see why. I actually, that was my one regret watching it. I was like, you could have actually done that, and it would have maybe been better, because there's all these misleads. Are the women they abandoned outside finally got in, and the new guys they met, they said, these are the assholes who abandoned us. You know, you think it's going to be the husband of the married woman. It's not. It's the guy, you know, it's the guy whose bar tab they were going off of. But there's this sense in there of, like, what's it going to be? It's almost like a horror movie. Like, who's what's going to jump out of the shadows here and kill Ted? We almost could have done more with that, but I love it as is too. It's just, I must admit, at the end, I thought, oh, we could have actually called our shot on that. It not have hurt anything. It might have turned up the burner a little. Yeah.
Like there's one way of watching a narrative unfold where you're like, oh, what's happening? Oh, now this is happening. Yeah. Now this is happening. And there's another of, oh, that thing they promised us, that bomb is going to go off.
It worked because there's multiple things that they did, so many bad karma things that you don't know which one's going to be the one to get them. And there is a mislead. You think it's going to be the husband. It's not the husband. It's the bar tab guy.
Yeah. The bouncer's saying, I don't know if they're hotter, but they're drunker. I just put a thumbs down emoji.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was a bummer.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Free nail, when Marshall says free nail.
Free nail.
I love when Robin says it's like the last 20 minutes of Titanic in here.
Yeah, I really like that. And again, that's set, just Steve Olsen and the scenic design, his whole team. Like, again, we're coming out of the Writers Guild strike. We've been off for 3 months. The first one back we go, you're going to have to build this apartment set that we've already created.
Yeah.
You're going to have to build it again, but on some kind of giant rotating wedge that can make it be literally crooked, and things will have to roll across the floor, and they fucking did it. They fucking did it coming out of that strike.
It's so funny, though, because each department, you know, like the hair department reads, like, are there wigs? Are there weird, you know, shaving landing strips in the head that have to happen? The makeup department's like, okay, there's a black eye. And poor Steve Olsen reading it. Oh, the entire set
we've been off
has
for 3 months
crooked.
And this is our welcome back. You fucking writers put us out of work for 3 months, and this is our welcome. But God damn it, they were fearless and inventive and industrious, and you just could not scare them off.
And did it overnight. They do it overnight. You have to understand, we would go home sometimes after shooting.
Yeah.
You'd come back and there's three different sets.
Three different
than the
sets
ones you left.
And one of them's this one. One of them's a tiltable set. It really was remarkable work. It felt like a magic trick a great deal of the time.
Yeah.
So huge props.
I love when I really like Ted's use the phrase ethical wormhole. Like, I've entered some ethical wormhole.
Yes.
Right.
They're so cerebral about their stupid night.
But you know what I realized? Like, the whole idea of there's no tomorrow.
Yeah.
Is almost like it's against the philosophy of the whole series.
Yes.
The whole series is there is a tomorrow.
Yes, there is a tomorrow.
There is a future.
A tomorrow
there,
and a tomorrow and tomorrow.
And a tomorrow
it's a very Macbethian.
Tomorrow.
Oh, no, sorry. It's a Scottish play.
Yeah.
we're about to put up a show tonight, so I don't want to jinx it. What?
Yeah.
So I ended. it is also the big theme we keep talking about. The show for a sitcom really has a memory week to week. Yes. It really has an accumulation of meaning. And for this episode, it's almost like in this episode, they're rebelling against that. Like, no, this is a one-off. We're in a one-off episode. We're not in a serialized show. It's like, no, yes, you are.
Yes. And it's also like we are unhooking, like Ted especially, I am unhooking myself from my moral code because apparently it doesn't matter.
Right.
But and I think, you know, people do experiment with nihilism. They experiment with like, what if I was, you know, I think I might've told you this, but this is probably a country song, but I always wanted to write a song with the verse, I dance poorly when I dance with the devil, because it's like, I'm not good at being bad. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't work for me. I think it does work for some people up to a point. I think ultimately being a dick does, except for the president, but it does catch up to people. It'll catch up to him somehow. He can't possibly sleep well. But anyway, I thought that
Have you seen him in cabinet meetings? He sleeps great.
He sleeps great.
Sorry. Stop getting so political, you fuckers.
Don't get political.
I'm going to write the comments for everybody. You don't have to write them. I'm going to write it right now.
I don't listen to this when you get show political. To get political.
Just talk about the sitcom.
Yeah. Talk about that guy who's amoral and seduces all the women. Don't get political.
Barney for president.
I thought Neil's high point in this episode was that area code run.
Very funny.
Just so smart. Very like language. Inside New York, but also like you get it.
Yes. You know? You get it. It's very, yes. I really like that speech.
Apartment roller luge was funny.
I think it was a great relaunch of just resetting everybody. 3 months off, we reset everybody on a new trajectory, albeit a downhill one, literally in the apartment and figuratively in Ted's love life. But boy, then rising from the ashes that hung over next morning after St. Patrick's Day and Ted walking out with that yellow umbrella was our way of saying, keep watching this TV show, America.
Right.
You know what I mean? I know we've been gone for 3 months. We're making the case that we're still a show you want to watch. And I think when Ted walks off with that yellow umbrella, I felt very confident launching into our 9 episodes in 10 and a half weeks, which we will talk about shortly.
Yeah. In the flashback, the butt dial version of Ted with the bouncer when he goes rock and roll and he does those
like
moves.
Weird karate moves.
Weird karate.
Was that fun or awkward? Because you were very funny doing that.
I think I thought it was fun.
It's like you said, you enjoy sometimes playing the things you did not get to play as Ted. Like, you just weird in a different energy here and you lean into it. Well, it's like college Ted.
Yeah, or drunk Ted like a whole different personality. Yeah. You know, Jordana said something really interesting at the end of this episode. She said, it's so nice that you played a character on TV who got to change.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so many TV characters are static. It's kind of like the form demands that they be static. But you guys really were interested in character dimensionality and growth and learning and kind of momentum of you're watching a guy grow up and you allowed him to grow up. And I always really appreciated that. And,
my daughter's obsessed with The Simpsons right now, and there was just a joke on The Simpsons where they said, we're characters in a comedy. We never change. And they all laugh, and that's like the last line of an episode. But in this, like, this, Ted changes. Ted changes and evolves, and the end of this episode says, keep watching. You're going to like where Ted's going next from here. This is a low point, but you're going to watch him rise like a phoenix here. And the energy at the end of this episode, I felt very excited watching the end of this episode because it reminded me of, like, we were saying challenge accepted. We had to do 9 episodes in 10 and a half weeks and we had been off for 3 months and we had, you know, we didn't know if people were going to keep watching, we're going to get canceled. And we said like, bring it on. We're going to give you 9 great episodes. And I think we really did. I think these back 9 are great. So I'm excited to watch the rest of them.
And we're back for a section we like to call C block. It's the C block. We love to read letters from you.
Working on it.
It sounds like a prison, an area of a prison. There was something ominous about the way we did it this time.
We love to hear from you. As you know, we open the show with voice notes from you. We close the show with a letter from you. Let us know how this podcast is landing on you. If you're enjoying your rewatch and re-listen with us, let us know about your relationship to How I Met Your Mother. Go to howwemadeyourmother.com, H-W-M-Y-M. Go to contact, follow the directions. Very simple. We have a letter today from, I believe, Harrison from the Pacific Northwest, from Seattle. In 2013, I was in a pretty toxic college relationship. I was self-centered and treated everyone else like an extra in a movie about my life.
You were just saying that. That's crazy.
Unsurprisingly, I drove all my friends and eventually girlfriend away. Depressed, I flipped on the pilot of How I Met Your Mother. For the next several weeks, I escaped into this increasingly warm place of hopefulness, love, and more importantly, the friends I no longer had and really needed. About halfway through the run of the show, I found those friends by chance in the back of a carpool to an event I was working. One invited me to play pond hockey like a week later, and we were fast friends. These guys are loving and honest enough to tell me what I needed to hear about my choices in life, and they weren't and still aren't shy about it. All along, I was burying the Ted that I thought I was beneath a thick layer of the objectionable qualities of Barney.
Wow.
I wanted to find the right girl, but I didn't know. I just wasn't ready. The St. Patrick's Day episode, No Tomorrow, slapped me in the face. It opened my eyes to what it meant to not be ready to meet my person and what an ass I was being. Eventually, the show taught me to be vulnerable enough to be honest with myself and make changes. It made me believe in things again. It empowered me to face my suicidal demons and shout them down. However much pain I faced going forward, I suddenly had this very real light of belief in me that I was going to go where I needed to go. My ladder was just propped against the wrong wall. Today, I'm 31. I'm married, going on 3 years to a woman I would never have deserved and frankly wasn't ready for 12 years ago. In your work, I learned to love myself enough to give love to others. It taught me to value, cherish, and fiercely protect my friendships. P.S. Thank you for the killer soundtrack to the show. No show has ever done better. That's amazing. Music to your ears, Craig.
Oh, my God. To all our ears. Josh Radner is responsible for a few wonderful picks in that playlist. Thank you for that letter and for that level of honesty of sharing that whole journey.
Yeah, beautiful.
It's so on theme for this episode. It's exactly what we just spent this whole episode talking about. And it's just real. It's human. We've all been there in one way or another at one time or another. Sometimes
God, you were
many
such
times.
A dick back in the day, Craig.
I've been a dick plenty of times. Or whatever it is, whatever way you're lost and does someone tell you, does someone help you?
Yeah.
Or does someone just like walk away because it seems too complicated? We've all been there. I really appreciate the honesty of that.
It's also
letter.
Funny how the show itself was his marshal.
Yes, the show was his marshal. The show sat him down and said, hey, check this out. And, that's just amazing. That's just such a gift to hear stories like that.
It's also not to quote myself, but in Happy Thank You More Please, I have that line, every 5 years you realize what an asshole you were 5 years ago.
Yes.
You know, and I think that like if you're growing, if you're doing the thing and growing up, you will look back on your former self with some measure of embarrassment.
Yes.
You just will. Like it's inevitable.
It. Because it's evolution, right? I mean, it's like,
think about everything just feels modern until you see pictures of yourself 20 years ago. And you're like, we were wearing what?
Every time.
You know?
Yes, every time. But we have to be generous and we have to be sympathetic to ourselves. And I think that Harrison from Seattle was just generous enough to say, I wasn't ready to meet my wife. And now I'm lucky enough to have met her at the right time. I think that that's, you know, you can sit around wallowing and hating your past self, or you can thank him for being a step along the way.
He made those mistakes to get you somewhere.
Yeah.
I am guilty, please acquit me, all sins are forgiven, in New York City.
How We Made Your Mother is hosted and executive produced by Josh Radner and Craig Thomas. And it's presented and distributed by the Office Ladies Network and Odyssey. The show is also executive produced by Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey. And the show is produced and edited by me, Alec Lev. Our co-producer is Doug Matica. Our audio producer and mixer is Alex Reeves at Point of Blue Studios. And our Gen Z masters are digital content producer Emily Blumberg and associate producer Catherine Grove. Artwork by John Morrow. Please follow, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your podcast player of choice. It really does help to spread the word. Our theme song is New York City by our own Josh Radner, with additional music by Craig Thomas and Andrew Majewski. Special thanks to Sam Theobald and Elliot Connors. Go to howwemadeyourmother.com to learn more and click on the contact page to send us an email or a voice message. Your stories and questions are an important part of the show. Subscribe to Josh Radner's Muse Letters on Substack and check out his music and everything else at joshradner.com. Order Craig Thomas's debut novel, That's Not How It Happened, wherever books are sold, and read his other published writing at craigthomaswriter.com. And you could subscribe to my own Dead Fathers Society on Substack. To learn about how you make a difference, this show's ongoing campaign to raise funds for congenital heart disease research, check out the Make a Difference tab at the top of our website. People will, in fact, dance.
The real question, it just hit me, am I in love with you, or just New York City?